All right, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
It is the Tornado, Tony Benica.
And Psychic Tom Head, Crystal Ball, all red hot.
All right, and we got some upcoming events to talk about, of course, but what a week. Last week was two big MMA events, some big boxing matches to talk about. I think the one we all watched part of Friday night was a busy night for switching channels if you're a combat sports fan, but the Rigondeaux-Lomachenko fight. And before we get into the whole discussion about quitting and all that stuff, I did want to play the clip of Stephen A. Smith and Teddy Atlas arguing about this one. And a little backstory first. I just found this out today. Did you guys know that Teddy Atlas is not going to be at ringside for pretty much the rest of his contract, as far as I've read?
Really? I heard something. About that.
Yeah, I guess his on-air rages got the better of somebody. They complained. I think one of the guys at his last appearance, he ripped into bad enough that he complained, and they wouldn't fire him, but they're basically, you know, they're standing by him, and they're not letting him talk about the situation, so it's kind of crazy, but there he was in his home studio.
they didn't fire him, but they're probably... So they're going to keep him on the sidelines and probably not renew his contract?
Well, he's worked there for 21 years, I believe. And he basically said that, you know, he's had a great experience with them. And, you know, it's just not something that he's able to talk about because he's still under contract. But you could tell he wanted to talk about it. He doesn't do a lot of interviews, as we know. I mean, it took me forever to get him.
And, you know, and sometimes he rubs people the wrong way. I got friends of mine that are big fight fans that don't like him, do not like him at all. I like Teddy Atlas because he will tell you as it is. You know, he is not a guy that is, you know, sometimes, like, if you're watching a fight, especially on a big network, now he usually does ESPN stuff, but if you would always hear, like, oh, we have an HBO fighter or so on and so forth. So... you run into a situation like that, it's like, you know, they would never talk bad about, like, their own guy. I remember a lot of times back in the day, like, Roy Jones, it was like, you know, HBO would never say a negative thing about Roy Jones, like, no matter who he was fighting. But Teddy was, that's not the way he is. And that will rub people the wrong way. And finally, it's like, he may have said something, and he may have ripped a commission, or he may have ripped an official, where he did something and somebody got butthurt. That's the bottom line.
Well, I think it was a combination of those things. And actually...
Somebody got offended because he called them out. That's what it is.
And one of the biggest things, I believe, was the Top Rank promotion, that the Top Rank agreement with the ESPN made with that promotion. And Teddy ripped into some of the officials, the judging, on one of those cards, and obviously, you know, the money talks there, so, you know, I don't think they wanted to take him away from ringside, but at the same time, they probably felt like the hand was forced. Maybe the Top Rank people gave him an ultimatum, and of course, Bob Arum's in the news for Top Rank as well for some other stuff, calling Dana White a piece of crap. But then saying he's welcome to come into boxing and he'd like that money to come in, so I don't know where he's at with that. Kind of funny.
Well, you know, that's a funny thing, you know. It's someone's a piece of shit, someone's a wonderful. Oh, wait, someone's gonna help me make money? Hey, buddy, pal! How you doing, man? And the thing is, I actually read this in a book one time about legendary Andre the Giant. And Andre was a guy that's like, you know, he either liked you or he didn't like you. They always say that about him. You know, and the guys he didn't like. And people could never figure out why. He just, there were some people he just didn't like. But they always said about him, he didn't have to like you to be able to work with you. And there were a lot of times, like, he might rough you up there a little bit, slap you around a little bit, but he would work with you because he knew what months.
Right.
So sometimes, it's like, there are people that I work with, and it's like, well, so, are you going to be able to work with this person? Yeah, I'm going to like you to work with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll put the differences aside, we'll get the shit done. You know, then at the end of the day, I don't want to talk to you. You know, we don't have to go out and get a beer. But business is business. So, you might be a piece of shit, but hey, can you help me out? Can we make money together? Then let's talk.
Yeah, he basically said it wasn't my decision. Teddy said, Atlas criticized the judging in the Manny Pacquiao loss, obviously, and then last month in Fresno card, headlined by welterweight Jose Ramirez, Atlas went at the co-analyst Mark Kriegel and questioned his credentials. So obviously that was embarrassing. You know, you can't have two anchors fighting with each other.
What are Kriegel's credentials?
I don't know. they said one official said they gave Atlas a bunch of chances. The Fresno show was terrible. He was terrible to Kriegel, and it was the straw that broke the camel's back. I didn't see that, so I don't know what sparked that.
Yeah, I did. Tony, do you know Kriegel's credentials?
I do not. You know, captain of butt hurtingness. You know, like, hey, sometimes people, you know, can't take, you know, truth. And Alex, I don't know this guy. I really don't know much about him. I don't know what Teddy said. But I don't know.
Well, so in other words, they made their decision, and it's take it or leave it, fans.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, they know that we'll put up with anything. I mean, we've been, it's like we're in a battered relationship. We just keep putting up with it.
And another backstory to this. Okay, we've done the Teddy Atlas backstory. Now the Stephen Smith backstory. We all know that the other guy on that Undisputed show used to be the one that would argue with him and get all kinds of viral hits. And the funny thing was that even though Stephen Smith, the commentator, has never boxed, there was another Stephen Smith that boxed the same weekend as the Rigondo fight with Lomachenko. And this guy had his ear basically ripped off at the top, and he wanted to keep fighting, but they had to stop it. So there's your extremes there. One guy never fought a day in his life talking about quitting, and the other guy living it, not quitting. So here's the clip before we continue to argue about this ourselves. You know, I think we're all in agreement. Let's listen.
Yeah, I'm giving a new name to Lomachenko. Nomachenko. Mm-hmm. Here it is. And you get part credit for that. Nomachenko. Because he makes fighters do what you're never supposed to do if you're a fighter. Relinquish. Submit. Quit. And he just did it again against a pretty damn good fighter.
Stephen A. Smith, fourth time now in a row that the fighter has just quit in between rounds. What it is about this dude that just obviously gets in people's minds and they can't continue.
Well, listen, I can't hear your question, but it really doesn't matter because I'm here to tell you right now, it's definitely Nomachenko. I heard that part about Teddy Atlas, and I'm prone to disagree with the great Teddy Atlas from time to time, but it won't be tonight. I can't tell you how disgusted I am. I mean, every time somebody goes against this guy recently, they quit. I understand his footwork is exceptional. He obviously must have some power. He clearly has some speed, and he's a superior technician to anybody that he's going in a ring against to this point in his career. But I mean, my goodness, can you at least expect a fight? I mean, we're talking about Rigondo was undefeated in 17 professional fights, 11 knockouts, was known as a surreal and big time counterpuncher. Somehow, someway, all he did tonight was duck and clutch. I'm trying to figure out, when was the moment where he hurt his hand? Can somebody tell me that? Because I didn't see him connect with anything but air. The only time his fist touched Lomachenko was when he went up under his arms to clutch him. He went and threw punches outside of that. He kept ducking. It just makes me, I don't understand it. I don't understand it.
Lomachenko.
Where's the referee when you need him? Grab a hold of Steven just for a second. It wasn't a matter. Look, it was not obviously a good fight, but it was a great performance. But you need to hire a good matchmaker. You can put two good talents in there, but if you don't understand styles, you're not going to get a good fight. But that's not the job of Lomachenko. His job is to take care of business with people in front of him. And he's taking... Now look, again, not a good matchmaker. Not a good match.
I don't want to hear that
going in. You have a defensive fighter against a guy who has defense and offense. That's like having a Super Bowl, trying to get a Super Bowl champion with just defense. We had the Baltimore Ravens. We had the Chicago Bears back in the 80s. But very rarely can you win a title without a quarterback, without an offense.
I'm not accepting that from you, Teddy.
And guess what?
Lomachenko
is a quarterback. He's Brady. He's Montana. He's Steve Young.
Stop it.
He's got it all. Yes, he is.
Forgive me, ladies and gentlemen. Excuse me. Forgive me, ladies and gentlemen, to try to go in first take mode, but it's necessary with the rhetoric that Teddy Atlas is spewing right now. Last time I checked, you got two undefeated champions going up against one another. It's one thing to outclass an individual. It's another thing for an individual to quit. Remember when Nicholas Walters, the X-Men, went up against Lomachenko? Not only did he quit in the seventh round, but literally ran across the ring to hug him and congratulate him for making him quit. I mean, how ridiculous this has been. I understand that Lomachenko may be great. I get all of that. That's but I still got some questions. You know why? Because I got questions about the level of competition that is going against him in terms of the heart inside dude's chest. You're a professional fighter and you're quitting with all your faculties in order. You haven't been staggered. You haven't been wobbled. You haven't been dropped. You know, you're not disoriented, but still in all, you're going to talk about you can't finish a fight. You know this better than me, Teddy. There's been plenty of guys that have fought throughout the years, okay? And you know, they broke their hand, but they continued with one hand for a fight just to get through the 12th round or whatever. Because why? It's a gladiator sport. There's valiancy that comes with it, but we're not seeing that from the recent fighters, the last three or four that have gone against Lomachenko. I got a problem with that.
Where's Mills Lane when you need him? Come in and take care of my brother. Put my arms around my brother and just tell him, just slow down just for a second, Steven. Listen, you can't argue. I said that already. What I'm saying is, it's like life. Everyone has to get tested. You don't know anything about anyone until they're tested. Until you find out, they might look good, they might have glossy muscles, quick hands, quick feet like you got quick feet. They might have all those things, but you don't know what's inside until that test comes. And guess what? Lomachenko is the test man. He's not the machine, he's the test maker. He tests you. He tests you deep inside, not outside, not on the surface. What's inside? That's what he does.
And hold on, wait a minute. I just want to make sure I'm hearing Teddy Atlas correctly. Teddy Atlas, who I've been watching talking about boxing for over 25 years. Teddy Atlas, the great Teddy Atlas, who sits there and demands for guys to, you know, bringing out Dabo Sweeney if you have to. You know, I mean, it's all about guts, baby. You know what I'm saying? Bring your own guts. That's what we're talking about here. We're talking about fighters. We're talking about individuals that are paid to professionally step in a ring and fight, and they're quitting. They're quitting when we barely even see them break a sweat. Just because they're getting embarrassed and schooled by a superior guy. If nothing else, you're supposed to have a puncher's chance. You're certainly supposed to have a puncher's heart in terms of believing enough in yourself to make sure that you go the distance. These guys are quitting without even going down. They're quitting, smiling, talking about their hands hurting, or Nicholas Walters' case wanting to give him a hug and a kiss after quitting. This is what we're seeing. Don't tell me that in the sport of boxing, just because somebody is superior, that's a reason to quit. It's not a reason to quit. It's not a reason to quit.
The most important responsibility a fighter has is to behave like a fighter. Most important thing.
Right.
But that doesn't mean everyone's going to do that. And you don't find out until you find out. Carmen Basilio.
Is quitting a part of that? Is quitting a part of that?
Fought Sugar Ray Robinson. No, you're not. That is not permissible. That is not allowable. There's no doubt about it.
Is quitting a part of it?
We live amongst human beings. It's not supposed to be.
Stop it, Teddy. We live amongst human beings,
not machines. Human beings. Listen, Carmen Basilio fought Sugar Ray
Robinson back in the 40s. So you're justifying quitting.
All right, so that's the end of that clip, but pretty intense argument. And I'm wondering as I listen to that, now that we've been talking about Teddy's separation there from the network in some respects, I wonder if they put Stephen Smith up to that and said, give Teddy some of his own medicine.
Great minds think alike. That's the first thing that was coming to me, and shame on me for not picking up it earlier.
But you can see points from both guys. I'm a little bit more partial to Teddy's argument that everybody's human. And then you look at the fact pattern, too. You know, all these guys have quit. You know, they made the joke that his name should be changed to Nomaschenko. And Lomachenko said that himself, too. So it's pretty obvious that, you know, this guy is really good. He makes people quit. He tests them, like Teddy says. But at the same time, you don't ever want to see a boxer quit, especially when he hasn't been down, he doesn't appear injured too bad. Even when they took his glove off and they were asking Rigondeaux if he was hurt, if it hurt anywhere, he said, no, it doesn't hurt, but he's quitting the fight. So there is some things to criticize him about, but then again, you know, if you have never been in the ring, like Stephen A. Smith has never been in the ring as far as I know, I mean, you really can't talk. It would be more appropriate, I think, for Dana White to talk about boxing than Stephen A. Smith the way he did. Because at least Dana White has done some amateur stuff.
You can go back to Roberto Duran. And that was the big rap on him with the No Mas fight. Because he did not seem like he was in trouble. He wasn't really out of the fight. He was somewhat behind. That was the whole thing. And I guess we could say the same about Rigondeaux here.
And he was a little bit overmatched as far as the weight, but I think it was a mental thing more than a physical thing for him, because he just couldn't get into any rhythm. He couldn't manage to land any punches, really, and he was holding a heck of a lot. And I've actually been to a fight where the kid's objective was to hold, and he actually got penalized for holding. And that's the only worst example I've seen than Rigondeaux the other night. It's sad, but it happens. You know, guys, they have bad nights. And, you know, what are you going to do? Are you going to get there, you're going to be on national TV and get your butt kicked round after round after round and try everything and nothing works and still continue? I mean, I'm not saying make up an excuse if you're in that situation, but, hey, I mean, if your hand hurts, that's your way out. You don't want to get embarrassed. I mean, it's fighting. Should you take more punches to the head? Should you just corner step in? I mean, if you quit yourself, it looks bad, but it's obviously kind of a strategic decision, too, in some ways.
Yeah, that's a good point, because in one sense, I thought he was kind of getting a taste of his own medicine, because this is the stuff he has done to guys all his career. And now all of a sudden, he's on the other foot. And I knew by around the fifth round, he's going to have to get dirty. And that didn't work, because if you noticed in the dressing room before, how Lomachenko had made a big deal out of clinches. And, you know, Lomachenko, I think, learned a lot from his second pro fight. I think he learned an awful lot from that no one's going to pull that on him again. And I think that he set the table good for it. And Rigo knew at this point, okay, I can't outbox him. I can't hurt him. And I can't get dirty with
it.
There was just no other way out.
And also, Rigondeaux was holding behind the head and hitting a couple of times, too. Dirty boxing, they call it in MMA, but it's in boxing, they call it dirty boxing, too.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I remember when Lola just did that complete, almost like a complete circle around it. It was just a bullet matador situation.
There was some hitting after the bell, and I mean, it is just brutal. So you can obviously put yourself in Rigondeaux's shoes, and you know, you're not only trying everything you know legally, but you're not even getting any progress with the illegal stuff. It's got to be frustrating. I'm not saying that to give him an excuse either, but you just have to look at the facts all around before you, you know, just sit there and ridicule a guy like that for quitting.
Well, it's like I watched the fight, and I mean, and I knew some people that were really, picking Brigham down to win. And it was one fight, as we discussed last week, I said it was one of those ones that, you know, the guys were so technically good and superior, it could be a stinker of a fight. Each guy trying to make the other one lead. And I was picking Lomachenko to win because of his superior size. 8 pounds, being the younger man, and the fact that he is more offensive, where Ringy Mail is more of a defensive fighter. So I didn't expect it to be that necessarily one-sided, and I did think it would be a distance fight, maybe along the lines of 116, 112, maybe 8 rounds, or something like that. Lomachenko winning the majority of the rounds superior work rate. As early as the second round, I feel like Ringy Mao is really struggling here. And I don't know if it's the fact that he is the smaller man. So when he was trying to clinch, the bigger man was, roughing him up on the side. And, the best, I guess, meme that I saw after the fight was, you got beat up real bad when you can't remember which hand you pretend to break.
Reminds me too about.
In the sparring session, my hand hurts. So Tony, you didn't land, you have to hurt your hand,
Yeah, it's like when I went to the first boxing gym I went to after college, and it was in my hometown of Quincy, Mass. And they kept putting me in against the street fighting kids that would come in, and they'd let like maybe a round go, and of course, what every kid that thinks he can street fight and box at the same time would do is he would just go nuts for the first minute, and then right when he'd start to tire, I'd be waiting for my opportunity because I knew it would happen. I'd just be defensive, and then just as soon as I'd start to wade in, the coach would be like, "All right, that's it," because he didn't want to hurt the new guy. So it's very frustrating.
Right.
It's very frustrating when you deal with a difficult style, whether it's a new guy or somebody that's very experienced. But, yeah, that was a very big disappointment for me, you know, especially considering these guys were the first two guys with two gold medals in the Olympics to fight each other. So, you know, big expectations and just low output for Rigondeaux. But I believe Rigondeaux has been off for a while, hasn't he? This is his first fight in a long time, so that could have had something to do with it. And then the other thing is just the quality of opponents. I mean, I don't have his record right in front of me, but, you know, like any prospect of his caliber, you got to believe that a lot of those fights in his early days were pretty much set up for him to win. And I think Lomachenko, on the other hand, had such a great amateur record that they threw him in with the Wolves right off the bat. I mean, Orlando Salido is only lost there. Just
you
a warrior.
You also have to look at Rigo's age, too. 37 is old for someone in his weight division.
Right. And on the undercard, I thought there was quite an interesting fight. I don't know the other guy's name, but Michael Conlon. I was joking with you guys. I sent you an email that says, oh, finally, I found a white guy who can up jab. No defense whatsoever as far as his face, but, you know, the other guy really wasn't testing him either. And Tom made a good point, said, you know, wait till this guy faces some top-notch caliber fighters before we pass judgment. But I always say it that, you know, traditionally the best up jab fighters are African-American fighters, and whatever it is, genetics or style or whatever it is, it just seems like every white guy who tries it looks bad. I've seen actually even one Mexican guy not be able to do it, so maybe it's something with the fast twitch muscles and genetics, but Conlon seems to defy the stereotype, so to speak. He looked pretty decent for a guy with his hands by his chest most of the fight. But actually, a lot of people were expecting him to knock that guy out, so who knows. The other big fight over the weekend, well, there's a big upset over in the United Kingdom there in London. James DeGale was talking about last week, he was talking about, oh, I need $30 million to live my lifestyle. Well, good luck with that, you know, because all your big title plans for next year are over. He got beat by Caleb Truax in his what was supposed to be a tune-up fight for him. And it was a decision, too, which means, hey, you know, this is pretty bad. You know, you're in your home country there, and you can't even get the decision. So DeGale falls to 23-1-1, and Truax improves to 28-3-2, and he gets the IBF World Super Middleweight title. He's been around a long time. He's had a lot of fights, you know, but it's kind of like that situation where nobody gave him any credit, and they kind of looked at him as an opponent in this one when he was serious business and, you know, all about getting that title, and he got it. And the other fight on that card was for the IBF World Featherweight title. That was Lee Selby, 25-1, beating Eduardo Ramirez, who was undefeated going in. So I guess that's 23-2 for DeGale. I guess I was reading that wrong. And 29-3 for Truax. So Eduardo Ramirez falls to 20 wins, 1 loss, 3 draws, and Selby improves to 26-1. And we also had Johnny Garten, 21-1, beating Mikhail Orlov, 12-6 with 1 draw. And then Joe Mullender, 10-2, beat Lee Churcher, 13-3-1. And those were both for the vacant IBF East-West Europe title. The Garten fight was for the welterweight title. The Mullender win was for the middleweight title. And then finally, on that card, there was another big title fight. Anthony Yard, 13-0, beat Nikola Shchekloka. That's a tough one. Shchekloka came in at 32-4, falls to 32-5 with the loss, with 1 draw. And Anthony Yard improves to 14-0, and he gets the WBO European Light Heavyweight title and the WBO Intercontinental Light Heavyweight title. Let's see if there's any other big ones over in Las Vegas at the Mandalay Bay last Saturday. Also, we had the Stephen Smith fight. It was Francisco Vargas he was fighting, 23-1-2. And Stephen Smith, the one that I was talking about earlier, lost his ear on that one part of it. Well, he didn't lose it. He got it stitched back on. But it was a little worse than the Holyfield-Tyson fight. The other fight famous for ears, pieces being detached. Francisco Vargas got the win there. Also, Orlando Salido had a gallant performance against Miguel Roman, but Roman came out with the win. He improves to 58-12-0. Orlando falls to 44-14-4. He did retire after the fight, but then he quickly unretired 4 days later. So he's planning on getting back to it in 2018. Also on that card, the main event there was the IBF World Super Featherweight title match between Kenichi Ogawa and Tevin Farmer. Tevin Farmer goes down on that one, and like Boxrec has problems with telling you the method, but
when that judges, I watched most of that fight after the Lomachenko fight, and I know Tevin Farmer. Tom and I saw him fight at the Valley Forge Casino a couple years ago, and the kid, that when he first started out, you know, he was more flash than substance. I actually, one of my write-ups early in his career, I called him a poor man Adrian Broner, because he came out to the ring with such a, I mean, when I call an outfit ridiculous, that's bad. And he came out there, and he's wearing shades, and I'm like, oh, he's wearing shades because, you know, all the twinkling lights on his outfit, you know, are probably blinding him, because we can't see, you know, in the audience. And he looked very uninspired. That is, like a real tough Mexican kid, and he just looked so uninspired. And I was like, you know, yeah, he has a couple losses on his record. He just doesn't impress me. And a few months later, he's fighting this Puerto Rican kid, Victor Vasquez, who I've seen a number of times. And I remember sitting there with Tom, and I'm like, boy, Farmer's going to have his hands full tonight, because Vasquez is a tough-ass cookie. And he chopped Vasquez to bits, and I was like, oh. Oh, shit, you know? And then I watched him a couple times as underdog, as the B-side fighter against an undefeated prospect on Fox Sports and ESPN. And both times, he won, and won in dominating fashion. Now he gets this fight with Ogawa, and he easily wins 9 of the 12 rounds. You know, maybe 10. You can maybe give Ogawa a chance for 2, maybe 3 if you're stretching it. And the announcer goes out there, he goes, okay, Judge A and Judge so-and-so have it 116-112. So now when you say two judges have the same score, that's about to say unanimous decision. So he, Judges A and B have 116-112. Judge C has a 117-111 for your winner and new champion, Tevin Farmer. But then they go, the guy stops. He goes, judges, blah, 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 have it 116-112. And he goes, wait, Judge so-and-so has it 116-112 for Farmer. And it's like, what? The other judge has it 116-112 for Down. And it's like, well, what? You mean you're telling me one of these assholes gave it to the other guy? And then it's like, and I'm like, I hope they don't call it a draw, and you know, it's like kissing your sister, because Farmer won the fight. And I'm like, and then when they said 115-113, and I got like this gut punch, and I'm like, oh shit, I know what they're gonna do. And it's like, a draw would be better, because that means you'd have an immediate rematch. And then it's like, I just knew it, and then said it, and it's like, you just looked in Farmer's face, and you just so legitimately felt bad for the guy. This is the guy that 5 years ago I was like, oh man, I'm not impressed or whatever. Then I went from not being impressed to, you know, this kid ain't so bad, to, you know, he's a damn good fighter. And then I got to meet him in person at a fight card and talk to him for a few minutes, and I was like, he's a legitimately nice guy. I went from a fighter that I really didn't like to legitimately becoming a fan of, both inside and outside the ring. He overcame some, you know, recent adversity. He had gotten shot in the hand, came back from that, and someone made a real good point that this could have been a ploy almost to protect Gervonta Davis. because Davis had made a real asinine comment recently about, you know, all the accident where Farmer had gotten shot. He had said something, you know, I forget what he said, but it was really a dick way of saying it. And it's like, man, Farmer gets that title, unification. Now you can kind of say, well, you know what, he's not the number one contender. I don't have to fight him. You know, in my eyes, you say something like that about somebody, and then they're a ranked contender, and they can still bring in a paycheck. You know, yeah, I said it. One, what you gonna do about it? Mm-hmm. I think that brings money, but it's like, I don't think Gervonta Davis wants any Tevin Farmer. I think Farmer tears him apart.
Yeah.
So could that be, you know, a little ploy to keep that belt off of him? You know, I don't know. Then again, you know, maybe this could work to Farmer's advantage. Maybe that we'll get to fight with Gervonta Davis, maybe on a big Mayweather card promotion.
Maybe. We'll get to Mayweather's statements a little later, actually. That would have been a good transition if we were ready for it. But we'll talk. We're definitely going to be talking about Mayweather later in a couple different respects. But that pretty much does it for the big fights from last week. There are some fights coming up tomorrow night. Big card over in Ekaterinburg, Russia. Speaking of Russia, there's a guy over there in some Russian country that's been getting all kinds of people, or Chechnya, I think, not Russia, big opponent of Russia there, but some Chechenian leader over there has been having people come over there, giving them millions of dollars and everything to pose for pictures and visit and everything, a lot of fighters. And Floyd Mayweather's actually been catching some shit for that. So he's one of them. He's one of them that went over there, and he's got to make money. So he went and shook hands with the guy, and I guess the big problem is he's accused of all kinds of human rights violations and all kinds of stuff. He's a dictator, and, you know, anything associated or close to Russia these days, it seems like it's bad news. But anyway, the main event here in Ekaterinburg tomorrow night is Alexander Povetkin, 32-1, fighting Christian Hammer. Great name for a boxer. 22-4, Hammer, and it's for the WBO International Heavyweight title. You gotta love it when guys are fighting for the official world title with lesser records than guys like this for an international title here. The co-main event is Magomed Kurbanov, 12-0, fighting Akinori Watanabe, who is 35-6. That's for the WBO, again, International Super Welterweight title. And then I bet this guy's nickname is Chupacabra, because his real name, last name is Chuprakov. Evgeny Chuprakov, he's 18-0, fighting Pablo Manuel Ojeda, who is 14-3. That's for the WBO Intercontinental Super Featherweight title. And if that ain't enough intercontinental titles, we got one more. Pavel Malakhov, 12-0, fighting Dainir Berio, who is 20-1. And he is fighting for the interim WBO Intercontinental Lightweight title. And also on this card, Yuri Kashinsky, 14-0, fighting Al Sands, who's 20-2.